I'm putting the agenda into the IRC. So let me do a quick review of that. Let's see. So we're going to do introductions, reintroductions, status of current action items, hopefully finalize the mission statement very quickly. We have only a few outstanding issues, and we want to spend most of the time on the discussion of bots, fake news, and verifiable claims, which Moses will lead for us. Thank you, Moses. For introductions and reintroductions, we have a few new people on today. I was hoping, let's see, two names that stood out were Claire and Evan. Would you two mind introducing yourselves to the group?
No problem. This is Evan. I apologize that I'm going to only be able to stay on the call for half an hour, but I am the director of knowledge, executive director of knowledge and metadata management at the New York Times. I oversee teams that have to do with structuring and organizing the information that we produce and that we put out. And I'm joining Amanda's invitation. I've been involved as sort of like a data guy at the Times. You know, a lot about how we structure our content. I've been involved in several different threads all over the planet having to do with verifying news claims and generally dealing with the fake news problem. And I'm interested to learn more about what this community is up to.
Excellent. And I apologize that we're doing the discussion during, I think, the last 30 minutes of the meeting. So we'll see if we can make faster progress on the first items to get to that. But
if you have to drop off,
please get in touch with us again, and we can try to fill you in on what the discussion was and follow up from there.
Hey Kim, would it be possible
Claire?
For us to move the agenda around so that the so Evan could be here for that? Because it's really hard to get on his calendar. So we could just kind of center it around that discussion. Okay.
Yeah, let's do that. We will actually do that right after the introductions and reintroductions. And sorry for cutting
Thank
off.
Thank you so much.
I'm
sorry to. Sorry to be so challenging. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being here. Claire?
Sure. Just briefly, I'm Claire Rumor, and I am in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. I work alongside Moses Ma, who will be presenting in a moment. And I'm sort of the staff social scientist at Future Lab Consulting, and I'm guardian of relationships and communications, making sure those are smooth.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us.
Mm-hmm.
Moses, sorry, do you want to take it away? We'll start talking about the fake news problem.
Sure. So we're going to spend 30 minutes talking about bots and verifiable claims. And we're going to use this process that we came up with called multivisioning, and it's really simple. There are like two or three rules. The first rule is that we would like everybody to be positive, and that means that when someone's speaking, you don't actually have to get on the queue. Just use a chat channel to say something positive, but make it substantial and have some content in it. Like a refinement or something else. The second thing is I'm going to ask everybody to actually say something during the event, because it's if you can bring out the participation of the people who are slow to talk, then the entire energy level lifts. And the third rule is that we do this thing called perspective switching. So we're basically going to ask a number of questions, and when the energy of the discussion dies down, we'll switch to a different view. Or a different perspective of it. So I may switch to open systems, or I may switch to user requirements, but we're going to keep the energy going. And I urge all of you to speak up and also to be verbose in the comment stream. But the only thing I do request is wait for the scribe to actually capture what the speaker is beginning to say so that there's context for your reply. Okay, so does anybody have any questions or issues before we start? Okay, so no questions. And then the only other thing is, how do I get the Q? Do I just say Q?
That's right, Q?
Okay, so I'm going to be watching the Q as well. And just join the queue if you want to say something. Otherwise, just please chat. Okay, we start with what we call the bingo round, which is like the Zen master who said, you know, empty your teacup. Everyone just say what you want to say. So it doesn't have to be an idea. It could just be your feeling. But if we can just share that for about 5 minutes, that would be great. Is there anybody who would like to start off and just share what they're feeling or thinking about this subject? Manu.
Yeah, just a very light framing. You know, thank you to those from the news industry that have shown up to the call. What I'd like to at least see out of the discussion today is a concrete next step. That would be great. I think at a very high level, what we're trying to do is see if we can use verifiable claims to address some of the fake bots, fake news problems around the world. We have traditionally not had a lot of journalists in the group. We have identified this as an area where digitally signed verifiable claims saying that something is a fake news item or saying that this thing is not a real person or saying I am a real person and this is what I think. We think that that would be helpful to journalists and the journalism industry. But we're not sure exactly how to proceed. So I'd love to see hear from the journalists that are here on the call today on, you know, what they're thinking in the space around verifiable statements and how they could potentially use those in their industry to combat the fake news, fake bot problem. That's it. I'm done.
Terrific. I'll switch over to David. David, do you have something you'd like to add? David C?
David Chadwick.
I can't hear David C.
Yeah, David, you might be muted.
Oh.
Just check.
Oh, yes, I was muted. You asked everybody to mute at the beginning. Yeah, okay.
So, David, you're probably still muted, and Ryan's on the queue. Hey, Kim, are you there? I'm wondering if people got disconnected. Hey, Ryan, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Manu. I don't know who else is still on the audio.
Okay. I think people have lost audio, or half the group has lost audio.
Hello, who do we still have on the call?
Claire is here.
This is Drummond. I dialed back in. It just completely stopped.
Hi, do we have audio? Oh, yes,
yes.
I do now.
Thanks. Yep, there we go.
This is Matt Stone.
Hi, I'm here. So where are we left? Is David Chadwick back? No?
Yeah, I've just come back. I don't know what happened then, but somehow I got disconnected.
Yeah,
so I don't know how much anybody heard of
of what I said at all. I'm not sure how much got through.
We heard nothing.
We heard nothing.
Please start over.
So please start
over.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, a whole subset of people got disconnected.
Oh, okay.
Which
okay.
is very suspicious. I just want to add. Okay.
Okay. So I'll start at the beginning. So basically what I said was I did respond to the post on this issue, but I didn't get any replies to my posting, so I didn't know whether that was people agreed with me or disagreed with me or you know, just had nothing to say. Basically, the point I made was that I think it's relatively easy solution to solve, providing we have a trusted issuer that can make statements such as this person is definitely a UK citizen or this person is David Chadwick, and if this is issued by some globally trusted entity like the UK government, then that should solve the problem of bots, because bots cannot get those credentials. The problem I see is that it's going to be quite difficult with the current state of the technologies of governments, etc., to get them to actually act the role of trusted issuers. And I think I ended up my post by saying maybe banks could be the trusted issuers they're looking for, because banks nowadays are required to know their customer very strongly before they will open bank accounts for them. However, not everybody has a bank account, so there's an issue there. Where do you get a trusted issuer that everybody is entitled to have a verifiable credential from? So I'll finish there.
Thank you. That's a very useful input. Let's see. Who's on the queue?
Ryan.
Hi. So can I confirm we're just doing some introductions?
What was
okay.
that? You want to confirm introductions?
Yeah.
Barely,
I mean,
could you turn up
the
volume?
Of this kind. Okay. Trying my volume. Does this help? Is this better? No.
Not yet.
Okay.
So, Moses, actually, I wanted to interject real fast. I think that our, well, first, someone has a lot of background noise, so let's do a mute round again. Second, I think that we have a high barrier to entry for using the queue system for our new attendees. So journalists and other new people, if you don't know what we're talking about when we say put yourself on the queue, actually for this round, just type up, and we're glad to have new people, and we don't want to make it impossible for you to join in the conversation. Back to you, Moses.
Excellent. Thanks. So let's continue. Are there any journalists who would like to talk about what you're working on? Because we're very interested in hearing this. Okay, no one there. So I assume that they may be calling back in.
Evan just put himself on the queue.
Oh, really, Evan?
Yeah, I think I figured out how this IRC business works. I just wanted to say that, you know, first of all, at the risk of disappointing folks, technologist, not a journalist. The only thing I tend to write is code, but increasingly emails. Basically, the Times right now is involved in sort of learning about the various efforts that are going on in the credibility space. We haven't, to my knowledge, made any super firm decisions about the route that we're going to pursue. But one of the things that strikes me about this particular initiative, and this is just me as somebody who knows the organization talking, not making an official organizational commitment, that the idea of making specific claims about the credibility of individual statements is something that we sometimes do in our interactive pieces. Or we write little pieces that are sort of like, here's what such and such said. Here's what, you know, here's what is true about that. Here's what's not true about that. I'm thinking that a piece like that might be a place to start exploring the kind of work that's being proposed in this channel. And I'm thinking of a couple of folks that might be interested in these efforts, so I'll direct their attention in this direction after this conversation.
Thank you. That would be wonderful. So this is Moses. I have a friend whose name is Paul Ingracia. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He was a managing editor at Reuters and has won a Pulitzer. And I think he's interested in this area, and I was wondering if it would be useful to bring in retired editors who'd like to participate in this. What do you think, Evan?
I can't see how that would I can't see how that would hurt. Newsrooms, as you might imagine, are skeptical places. So the more folks who have worked in that environment say that this is a good idea that you can muster, the easier time we're going to have overwhelmingly innate skepticism of journalists.
Okay, terrific. So I think what we can do is switch the context because we're already running down on time. So what I'm going to switch to is how would this work? I just open the floor. Maybe Manu and Drummond could, you know, speak up. But anyone is included. So let's talk first about credentialing journalists or even articles with little, you know, verifiable claims inside of an article. And then we'll switch over to verifying that people are not bots.
Sure.
Manu, do you want to kick off?
Yeah, sure. So, and this is kind of a response to Adam Migas in IRC. So, yeah, first of all, thank you so much, Evan, for, you know, giving us that perspective and for kind of helping to connect some folks in your organization to the work that we're doing here. There are a number of kind of loose ideas floating around on how a verifiable claim could be used in journalism. One of the things is, you know, not credentialing journalists, but giving journalists a stronger kind of set of verifiable claims where they can say that they actually do work for the New York Times. They have, you know, published, you know, items X, Y, and Z. But I don't think that's necessarily where we'd put a lot of our focus, right? So we have people from the education industry that want to use verifiable claims to demonstrate that people are trained to do certain things. I think journalists would naturally fit into that area. But what I've heard people talk about, you know, when they say verifiable claims and fake news is, can you even identify whether or not a story has been vetted by a professional of some kind, right? So it's basic fact checking or having a verifiable claim that points to a very specific article on the web and says this has been identified by, you know, CNN, the New York Times, you know, the Register as factually inaccurate. So basically when people, you know, click on clickbait and end up at a site, there is something that the browser can check to warn the person that, hey, you're on a site that is has been identified by many different news sources as being factually inaccurate. So this would be the same kind of warning that would pop up in front of a person when they go to a known scam site or when they visit a site that has an expired SSL certificate. Right, it's the same kind of, you know, browser trying to protect the user from a known bad site or known bad story. So that's, you know, the ability to create a verifiable claim that says this is a bad website or this is a bad story, and then being able to kind of follow your nose back to the proof where you don't necessarily have to trust any particular institution to give you that feed. So like right now, if you're in Google Chrome, you depend on Google Chrome's list of bad sites to figure out whether or not the site you're on is a known phishing site, right? And that's a fairly centralized solution, whereas combating fake news and fake news bots may require a more decentralized solution where you can have many different news sites vetting articles and having their own list of verifiable statements saying this is a fake news site, this is not, so that the person that's browsing the web can choose what those kind of sources of truth are. Now, clearly, that has broad concerns, like, you know, if people follow certain kinds of news sources, they may get biased information. So that's a huge discussion that we really can't have in this group. That's a discussion for the journalism, journalism folks to have. But just the simple fact that you can, the simple fact that an organization, a journalism organization can issue a verifiable claim stating whether something is factually accurate or inaccurate might be another possible signal that's useful to people browsing the web. So that's kind of a rough idea of one way verifiable claims could be used to combat fake news bots, things of that nature.
Can I say, I see a couple of problems with that, Manu. One is, if you take somewhere like Breitbart, then sometimes the items they publish will be true, and other times they'll be fake. So publishing a verifiable credential, say Breitbart News is a fake site, is not necessarily, it's not always true because sometimes they publish the truth, but B might land the issuer in legal hot water to be sued for libel or the equivalent. So you know, a lot of this is, you could say, is an issue of judgment as well, because two people see an incident and they report it in different ways, which might appear to be opposing, but actually both true from a slightly different angle as well. So I think asking one news site to publish a credential on another news site, saying this news site is bad or not, I think that's going to be very difficult, practically speaking.
Yeah, agreed.
That's kind of,
yeah, agreed. And I don't think we'd want to do that. But there's a queue. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, the queue, I believe Nathan, is that the next person?
Yes,
N-A-G-E.
That's Nathan. I think this adds to what David just mentioned, is that it's very easy to incentivize someone to forget, but you can't really incentivize someone to disclose information that they know. And so when you build a claim system that's around the idea of negative reputation, it's very hard to make the system it's very hard to cryptographically know that a negative reputation exists, because there's very little incentive to disclose that on part of the person that has the negative reputation. That doesn't mean that creating negative reputation attestations is necessarily a bad thing. It just means that it's hard to know whether those will flow to the end user, creating a centralized service that's doing all the censorship for the user. And that obviously creates lots of different problems from a journalist's perspective. But what is a lot easier to do is to let the journalist create a lot of positive reputation events, or basically create assertions about who said what. And you know, I think traditionally that's part of what good journalism is all about, is citing those sources and tracing the information back to know whether it's credible. And if we have tools that let the web kind of bake in some of that that good journalism into the articles in a verifiable way, I think the fake news will be a lot easier to differentiate or distinguish from the real news, or the good journalism, or the in-depth journalism will be a lot easier to distinguish from the casual blogging, or just more idle statements that might be made on the web.
Terrific, thank you. And the next person on is Lionel, and I wanted to remind everybody, please say something positive in the chat channel, even if you haven't spoken.
The challenge of the problem is huge, and it's very sobering to look at the edge cases. One clarifying case for me is when the Holocaust denier was brought to trial, the expert witness that the fake side hired wrote a fake book that then became cited thereafter. So we're facing a very difficult challenge, but I do think in the spirit of agile and lean development, we can grab onto some implementable aspect that can move things forward. In my opinion, on the problem side is the changing nature of the news. So even if you, let's say, take a web page, do some kind of overlay, and then say, this is a verifiable fact, this is a verified fact, using your idea of leveraging a kind of trusted authority that's been working for PKI, and we can have different authorities signing things, which would allow even for the so-called fake news, because really we have extremely robust dialogue around differences of opinion, and sometimes they're even differences of just dimension. I mean, people barely have any shared anchor to have a discussion. And it's in the interest of society that all the voices be raised, but that we label the malicious and malevolent voices. So I'm just naming the problem that it's hard to even label a line on a web page because it's not canonical. You can't hash it. It looks like one thing on one device and people are reading on their mobile. But now on the positive side, and in the spirit of moving forward on something, and I'm excited that Evan's here, by the way, because I didn't realize the New York Times had a whole semantic program in knowledge management. So in that spirit, maybe the news organizations and maybe anyone could raise a kind of trust authority that would sign statements, and then we can go with a fairly successful model that I see that generally people understand, which is the Snopes model. So there's a page opened on some kind of verifiable claim or fake news discussion site, and it says, here's the issue, you know, like the World Trade Center conspiracy. And here are claims, and these claims are signed by the New York Times verified claim, and these are signed by Breitbart claims. And then at least people who are clicking on a clickbait or clicking somewhere could jump over and at least see at a glance, oh, this is kind of Breitbart stuff, and according to the discussion, I consider that fake news, and so I don't want to be here. And this might allow a kind of decentralized way that anybody could verify claims, and then people could gravitate towards those that they trust. So I'm just citing the Snopes model, and I also wanted to sneak in Wikipedia footnotes. I think there also the references in Wikipedia are pretty good and people understand that. So maybe some kind of model that could, where we could cite a fact and in that spirit go to some kind of Wikipedia style footnote, and again it would be signed and you could access the certificate.
Okay, thank you so much for that. And before we go to Evan, I just wanted to inject something. Our company works in the area of deep learning and machine learning, and I think what we need to do is add new technologies to address this. For example, we could do stuff around advanced reputation systems with the ability to use AdaBoost, adaptive boosting, to figure out who is actually verifiable and not verifiable sooner. So these new technologies may be able to give us better solutions in this area. And then I will yield the floor to back to Evan. Evan, are you there?
Yeah, great. Thank you. I'm going to have to hop out after this. But just to build on some of the observations that folks have made, I appreciate all the folks on this call who view the New York Times as highly credible. I grew up in Kansas. And I can't say that everybody who is in my cohort there feels the same way. So I think we need to be sensitive to and in deciding what is and is not a credible source. The second thing is that as somebody with 2 degrees in computer science, I love absolute Boolean claims. Like, this is true, this is false. Sadly, I think the way that most journalism plays out is that there are very few sort of, from a formal logic, you know, from a formal reasoning perspective, logically false things that one can say, this is a false claim, full stop. I think the claim that I think could be more reliably made is that this piece contains misleading claims, and this other piece tells you what goes on. that's closer to, I think, the way the real messy world of news reporting works, and the direction I might encourage this group to consider applying the technology, rather than saying, like, you know, this article says X and X is false. I think it's much easier to say that this article says X and X is a misleading claim. On that note, I'm afraid I'm going to have to drop off the call.
Okay, thank you so much for joining, and we look forward to you joining in a later call. Okay.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Okay, thank you. So I'm sorry.
Hi, is
Ryan,
my audio improved?
You're on. Please.
Is my audio improved?
Again. Yes, it has.
Yep.
Okay. I'm also trying this though. So I just wanted to add that the Wikipedia idea sounded awesome as a positive comment, and I would love any kind of ground truth of verifiable claims in my news stream. Financial stories where only the financial numbers were verifiable, perhaps by a news source that specializes in financial reports, or by the companies eventually signing those sorts of things themselves, and then all kinds of news could be built on that. Those seem like low-hanging fruit. Thanks.
Excellent input. So I'm going to suggest that we switch the perspective, and instead of the claims within the document, to look at how to identify someone who is not a human. How do you identify a bot, and is that possible? And again, the cue is great, but if you want to just speak up, just please speak up. Does anybody have any ideas for how to use decentralized ID to verify someone is actually a person and not just a way to boost your Google numbers? Anybody? Kim, that's very funny.
Do we have Amigus on the queue?
Adam, I guess.
Yeah,
okay. Please.
Yeah, hi. Thank you. Just a couple of general observations and some points after listening to the conversation so far. So it seems like to me when we talk about, you know, the edges of this community, you know, the people that are the journalists, the editors, the sources, that to me is a place where we need to talk about, you know, identities, especially sort of authoritative identity, like somebody mentioned earlier in the call that, you know, a bank might stand up and sort of vouch for somebody or something, or there might be a government-issued ID associated with an identity. And I think at the end of the day, that's needed, and that's the place where it's needed. And then as you get closer to, you know, when we start talking about the content, like whether it's fake or whether it's real, whether it's factually correct or not, then it becomes more consensus-driven and probably/hopefully less about identity. So to draw that to its logical conclusion, you want to be able to identify that people are real people when they're writing or editing or providing source information for a story, but then when the story is actually written and it's up there on the web, sometimes most of the time I might argue, you don't necessarily want to tie that back. I shouldn't say most of the time. I think sometimes you might not want to tie that back to a real individual, and I'm thinking specifically when I say that, sources in particular, and then, you know, obviously the author's his name, so that they retain their identity in the mix. And then the last thing I'll say is I just had to echo what Evan I think said as a parting comment, which is to me this ought to boil down to fact checking. I don't think we're going to win anything if we're talking about rating sites or trying to curate. You know, there is a whole community that's trying to sort of bite that off, and I think it's coming out of the library, the librarians community. which is to, you know, actually curate, and they specifically cite the concern of youth and their inability to sort of vet sources and thus their susceptibility to fake news. That's kind of where it started. But I don't think for us, I'd rather see us just, if we're going to make it about content, make it about the facts in the content than their trueness or their falseness, as opposed to trying to rate or curate stories or sites. That's my comment. Thanks.
Terrific. Thank you. I'm going to move us along more quickly, so I'm going to ask Manny to speak next, but I want to say that we're running out of time, so after we finish on bots, I'd like to go to action items, and then we'll conclude so we can finish the rest of the agenda items.
I'm going to take myself off the queue so other people can jump in.
Lino, you have the floor.
I wonder if it would be helpful just to provide a simple certificate and policy that says I am a human that people could voluntarily append, and that might help us to identify bots. It is tricky, like everything is. Everything is slightly automated, but I think that might help.
Thank you. Nathan?
I just wanted to add a note that when we start talking about making attestations, having a network of people who are making attestations is one of the best resources that we have. So, for instance, if I don't do an attestation of myself that says I'm a human, but other people can make that attestation about me, and I can present other attestations that are hard to fake, like having a bank account without disclosing necessarily who my bank is, or being able to make attestations that are hard for a bot to make because it takes real-world energy or resources in order to make those attestations. It really lets us bring in some of the richness of the real world to validate people's authority to say something and make sure that they are fake accounts or that people aren't trying to influence the rating algorithms or the machine learning algorithms through automation as opposed to how it was actually intended to function. And it's important that we get some of those details right, or you'll open up the same kinds of avenues to attack that the current system has.
Excellent point. Matt, you have the floor now.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
So on the question of bots, hang on a sec. It seems that the question of curation and the role of bots are quite different in this space. I think I love the aggregators and curators of news sites, and I use them heavily. But the role of the bot impersonating a person who is cross-posting news sites or sharing or doing, you know, likes and plus ones and all that kind of stuff kind of provides a megaphone effect for news articles and other content that might not have an audience otherwise. It sort of gives it sort of a false volume. And that seems like an area where we might really kind of dig into this identity thing about who is or what is, doing those sorts of activities.
That's a great idea. I think that's definitely something you should work on. And we're running low on time, so I'm going to move to action items. If we don't have anyone else for the queue, is there anything else anyone else would like to say? And I'd like to encourage someone who hasn't spoken yet to contribute something.
This is anybody? Joe. I'd like to chime in.
Okay. Please do. Didn't Joe want to chime in? Am I?
Yes, but he may be muted. There you are.
Am I back now?
You're back.
No, you're back. Go ahead.
Okay. This notion that Nathan introduced of claims that have a real-world cost, I think there's a nugget in there. It's a great idea, but there's also a nugget that what we're really talking about is the economic cost of defrauding the system. And so if we can look at providing systems that are economically feasible for humans and economically infeasible for bots, then I think that starts to open up a whole lot of options that we should consider.
Yes, looking at the underlying economics makes sense. It's true in fish, in spam as well, right? As long as spam is free, people are going to try to take advantage of it.
And cryptography, okay. And security. I mean, you can't anchor any given system to be absolutely secure, but you can raise the cost to compromise it.
Okie doke. So does anyone else want to add anything to this discussion before we move on to action items? Let's do it then. Let's move to action items. Please speak up or join the queue, and let's talk about what we should be able to do here. Volunteering would be good. Let's start with Matt.
I think that might be
that was, yeah, that's left over. I don't have anything new to add.
Oh.
Sorry.
So I think, you know, Evan mentioned that there were some people in the New York Times that were interested. I think we, you know, as a community, we're going to fail if we do not have journalists in lockstep with us as we, you know, move on this. So I think that's an obvious next step, is get some journalists engaged so that we really understand what they want to do. Because, you know, if you look at fact checkers, you know, there is the Wikipedia model, which is proven to be a really good model. So there is a way that we could pursue that. But I'm wondering if, you know, hearing from journalists might be a good thing. I'm trying to pick something that we can do that is funded, right? So volunteers, it's harder to get something going with volunteers. It's much easier to get something going with people that are paid. Their job is to go out and report the news. So asking them, what tools can we provide for you that are going to make you more successful at delivering accurate news and preventing, you know, quote unquote fake news from spreading out there. I think that's the next step. Who at the New York Times do we need to talk to? Who at Getty do we need to talk to make that happen, right? So I think next step is just let's engage journalists and get them more integrated in the group. I think anything that we do in here without that happening is just a wild guess that, you know, is most likely not going to pan out.
Okay.
I'm away from my computer, but could I add something low-hanging fruit for journalists?
Yes.
So it seems like if we could get them just signing the subsections of the articles they publish so that quotes from those articles could be verified, that would be extremely low-hanging fruit. It would be totally systemic. It wouldn't change their workflow at all. And it would greatly increase the use of people saying, hey, the New York Times gave me this quote. This is a verified quote.
Thank you for that. Please enter that into the comment stream as well. One question for Manu. How much money do you think we need to raise to get this initiative underway? And my recommendation is, I actually know people who are in the philanthropic area. So if we got like one Republican donor and one Democratic donor, it would look like a bipartisan effort. We might be able to find something that's inclusive. But Manu, do you have any idea for how much money we need to get an initiative underway?
So I think the how much question depends on what we're doing, and I don't think we know what we're doing yet. And to understand what we're doing, we need to get a bunch of journalists involved that agree on some low-hanging thing that we can do that they feel is really going to move the needle on where we are right now. So I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe they identify something that only takes $1 million to achieve, and maybe they identify something that needs a $15 million. You know, infusion. But until we have, you know, a very good set of discussions with journalists, you know, Reuters, AP, Associated Press, New York Times, we have connections there that we could leverage, but we need to hear from them what they want to see. And then once we know, we will know how much money it's going to take us to get there.
Okay. So, any other action items?
Moses, is it okay if I take back the floor and any other action
yes,
items?
Yes, go ahead. Terrific.
I did have one other action item that I can assign to myself. So there were a lot of good insights here. Me not having thought through the problem space that much, I found a lot of really good perspectives that would be good to take away. So, you know, this is all captured in the minutes, but from the minutes, I'd like to draw up specifically what I heard of some of the key insights and approaches. And we can, you know, of course, edit that to make sure that, you know, the understanding is correct. And thank you, Moses, go ahead.
No problem. So let me just add two things. Claire is graphically recording, so we'll come up with something in a few days that's a picture of what we've been saying. And then the final thing I throw in there is an old friend from high school is actually now the CEO of the Washington Post, so I could try reaching out to him and to see if there's a possibility of getting them involved as well. Okay?
Awesome. That's great. So actually what I want to do, if we can, is try to just wrap up the mission statement, because the rest are announcement types of things that I can send out over email, and we can follow up there. Let's see. So mission statement is posted in the IRC. And so scroll all the way down to the bottom of that page for the current draft. We have three outstanding items.
Who's left?
I'm here, Manu. I bet you everyone on SIP is still here. Everyone that's dialing in through the regular telephone network's getting disconnected due to provider outages.
Yeah, that appears to be the case.
The lesson is, use a SIP client.
Well, actually, I was in via SIP.
Oh, really? And you got disconnected, too?
Well, I thought I was in via. I thought Skype would come in via SIP. Maybe Skype came in over a regular line.
Nope, Skype goes over the regular telephone network. Yeah, and Skype doesn't do SIP as far as I know.
Yeah, okay.
Kim, maybe you should just plow forward.
I don't know if Kim is connected yet.
Yeah.
She's not on.
So I will, let me send her a message. Oh, there, good.
Hey, so you probably heard nothing of that.
Yeah.
What I was trying to say is that we have three issues left. Let me pick off the easy ones. So one is that Christopher put a comment that proof of existence may not be appropriate. It's, let's see, what did he say exactly? It is a tactic supporting a solution. I'd be fine striking that.
Yep,
any thoughts on that? Oh, Dave.
Yeah, I'm fine with striking it as well.
Okay, let's kill it. See, the next one is a issue that I had raised around credential longevity, which I'm also fine striking as long as I'm fine dropping as long as we make it clear that, you know, our approaches are allowing recipient-centric you know, credentials, basically. Which brings us to the last one, which is bearer, let's see. Sorry. Okay. Presentation of proofs by the bearer. We got some feedback from David Chadwick. His concern was that they can be stolen, copied, used by anyone who gets a copy. In my counterpoint to that is that I believe our approaches are, the intent is to avoid that. You know, we're using cryptography to be able to do a challenge, you know, challenge and proof of, you know, the claim. I don't know if I'm missing something there. David mentioned that bearer credentials would have been a good substitute. I'm not familiar with the semantic difference between those two, really. But if we can just resolve that one, that's the last issue. Manu?
I'm fine with bearer credentials. It's a bit of a term of art in the industry. A bearer credential is like a carnival ticket that you get at the gate that you can then kind of go in and use the ticket anywhere. Because you're the bearer of that credential, it's automatically valid, and people can kind of swap credentials around. The downside of bearer credentials is that anyone that gets a hold of it can use it, and it's valid. But there are some cases where you absolutely want a bearer credential. Like, for example, when you're voting nationally, that little thing, the piece of paper that they give you after they've identified who you are, that thing is very much a bearer credential. So there are a number of very good uses for bearer credentials. And because we are saying we're seeking solutions inclusive of, we should state specifically, like, we do believe that there's a room for bearer credentials in the work that we're doing.
Okay. Let's see. Dave.
Right. I think David Chadwick's point was mostly to the concept of bearer credentials, where the proof itself is simply that you are bearing the credential. And the fact that we put presentation of proofs by the bearer, I think he even mentioned this in an email, satisfied. It seemed like my reading of his email was that it satisfied him, the language that we're using, because we're talking about presenting proofs other than bearership.
Okay. So I think
Sorry, I'm back on the call now. So I got disconnected like everybody else. You're right. I thought the wording, when it was saying proofs, meant it wasn't just the bearer credential, but there was something as well as that to prove that you were the owner of it. So I think, you know, this, you gave the example of a voting slip. I mean, we do online voting now, and even with online voting, certainly with the ones I'm using, there's some sort of one-time password or something that I have to put in as well. And that is a proof. So if someone stole my credential, they still wouldn't have my one-time password. If there's some proof as well, that's great. But if it is just the fact that you possess it, then I would be against us having that in the VC work, because I think we're trying to get away from that. I mean, that's what the SAML stuff is all about, bearer credentials. And they've been trying to get away from that as well. So I think it would be a backward step to just have credentials where the mere possession is sufficient.
Okay, I'm not sure if I grasped that, actually. So you're saying where the mere presentation?
Yeah, so I mean, you're on the internet, there's some entity, you have no idea who they are or what they are, whether a bot or anything. They present this credential to you. They show they've got no right to hold it or anything. And because of that, you give them the privilege, you give them the resource, you give them whatever it is you've got. That's what I think of as a bearer credential. So there's just total random stranger comes across the internet, says, here you are. It's just like a ticket to a concert. You turn up for a concert, here you are, I've got a ticket, right, you're in. And there's nothing else needed.
Okay. It sounds like, unless I'm missing something, it sounds like we still have some contention there.
I actually don't think that we do. I think with the language that we've chosen with presentation of proofs by the bearer, I think that that eliminates the contention, at least from, that's my read on David Chadwick's perspective, which is...
Yes, I agree. I think if you're presenting some proofs as well, that's fine, but then I wouldn't call that a bearer credential.
We're saying...
A verifiable credential. Because
right, we're
you,
saying... Sorry, there's a delay. I don't mean to step over you.
Got it. So it sounds like, okay, I thought that we were talking about different terms. So presentation of proofs by the bearer.
Yeah, that does not say bearer credential. That just says the person who is holding on to the credential must present a proof is effectively what that's saying. And I think it covers everything. The language covers everything, and David Chadwick does not have an issue with it now, because we're not using the term bearer credential.
Got it. Okay. So we are done with the mission statement. Great job, everyone. We have a few action items that I will follow up over the over email in case people need to drop off. For anyone who does care to hear those, let's see. So one thing I'm going to do, an action item for myself, and I'll add these to the to the agendas afterwards, is to update the scribe list so we can start getting more disciplined again. I think that the scribe list is woefully out of date, so that way we can help ensure, you know, the same people aren't scribing every time. It took Lionel to sort of force me to realize that, so thank you, Lionel. So the other thing that I want to do is get better about tracking our work items. To that extent, I'm soliciting contributors in a couple of areas. So one, I think life cycle of a verifiable claim is in excellent shape. For the DID spec, I mentioned to Drummond that we could really use someone sorting through things at a higher level. Drummond thought that was a great idea. He's looking into looping in some PM types on his side in his org that could help do that. For anyone interested in data minimization and selective disclosure, we can use a lot of help there. Ping me if you're interested. I'll also be following up. And let's see. That is pretty much it. I will try to wrap up now. I'm just checking real fast to see if there were any questions. Okay, Dave?
That's from before. I don't have any.
Okay.
I don't need to be on the queue.
Got it. Okay, sounds good. So it was great. Thank you, everyone, today. I saw Lionel. Lionel, I'll be following up with you about data minimization. And thanks again. Great job on the bots and fake news, Moses. And we'll see you guys next week.
Thanks,
Jim. Thanks,
all.
Bye, everybody.